Welcome to this session on what's new for developers in Visual Studio 2017. My name is Walt Richer. I'm a senior staff instructor at LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com. My content team there produces hundreds of developer courses each month. And you can find a comprehensive course on Visual Studio at this bit.ly link. Also, my source code is shown on this slide. You can get it at GitHub, and I'll be using that throughout this course. The agenda for today is, in this session, I'll be looking at several features of the IDE. I've gathered them into categories that are shown on this page. There are more features than I can show in the time that we have here. I have an hour, and there are definitely more improvements than I'm showing here. So I'm concentrating on the ones that are IDE specific. First thing I want to look at is some of the web tools. There's two improvements that I want to touch on. One is the Chrome debugging. This allows you to use the F5 debugging tools in Visual Studio and launch Chrome and then attach a debugger to Chrome and debug your JavaScript. And you can put your breakpoints in your JavaScript code. And the other piece that I want to look at in the web world is the new support for the ASP.NET Core web applications. You now can support Docker. So you get a new project dialog that has the add project dialog that has the add Docker option, or you can also configure Docker in an existing project. So in Visual Studio, I will start by looking at the Chrome debugging. So I'll go here and load this from GitHub. So there's now support for JavaScript debugging in Visual Studio when your app is running in the Chrome browser. It works the same as the IE debugging tools. And let me show you, I've got some JavaScript here in this loan.js file. And you put in a breakpoint just like you would in any other code window, pressing F9 or clicking on the sidebar. That adds a breakpoint. And then you're going to start debugging by choosing the Chrome browser from this drop-down list and then starting the application. When the browser appears on your screen, you'll see this screen where it says Chrome, where it says Chrome script debugging in Visual Studio is enabled. This is part of the process of getting the debugger to work inside Chrome. After that screen disappears, it takes about 3 or 4 seconds, then you'll see your web application. Now, the way this site is built is I have this section for student loan. The student can come in here and type in the amount of the loan, the rate, and the length of the loan in months, and then they can click on this calculate button. And when you click on the calculate button, that takes you over to the JavaScript code. So I'll click the calculate button, and you'll see that it switches over to Visual Studio, and it's hit my breakpoint, and all the normal tools you'd expect to see in Visual Studio work. So you can see that in my locals window on the bottom of the screen, I've got the values for rate, denominator, and loan amount. Those are coming in from the parameters here in this function. You can step through your code by clicking on the step into button and do all the normal debugging tools that you would expect to see. Now, if you prefer to use the Chrome F12 debuggers tool, you can also disable this feature. To do that, you're going to go to the Tools menu, choose Options, then search for Chrome. And then uncheck this check marker, enable JavaScript debugging for ASP.NET. I'll leave it checked on my machine, but that's how you would disable it. Now, the other feature I wanted to talk about for web developers is the support for Docker. Now, Docker containers are a hot topic currently. They provide a way to package an application with everything it needs to run. You get the runtime code, the system tools, and system libraries. Essentially, anything you would install on the server, you can put in a Docker container. Think of the container as an isolated place where an application can run without affecting the rest of the system. And equally important, the system doesn't affect the application. This makes containers an excellent way to package and run applications in production environments. Another benefit of Docker containers is that they're lightweight, which helps scale applications because you can quickly spin up new instances of the containers. So what we have in Visual Studio, the new feature is the ability to automatically configure your ASP.NET Core web app to use Docker containers. We'll start by creating a new project. Choose C# for my language, choose web, then pick this item here, the ASP.NET Core web application. I'll just leave it at the default names and locations. On the next screen, where you're configuring the ASP.NET Core 1.1 templates, I'll pick the web application, and here's the key thing to note is this checkbox here that says Enable Docker Support. You put a check mark here, and then before you continue, you'll have to have Docker for Windows installed. And if you don't have that installed, you can learn more about it by clicking on this hyperlink here. For my example, I won't put a check mark here because I want to show you how to add it to an existing project. So I will click on OK. Now this is a normal .NET Core web app, and typically when you would run this or debug it, you'd be using IIS Express. To configure this so that it uses Docker support, I'll right-click on the web application, choose Add, Docker support. You'll notice that a new section shows up in the Solution Explorer in this area. And the other key thing to notice is that you no longer have IIS Express listed here as the deployment location. Instead, it's going to deploy directly to Docker. Next topic I want to look at is extensions. What has changed in the extension management tool? And the main thing that I want to look at in this area is the roaming extension manager. This allows you to sync extensions across Visual Studio installs. Now, we've had this in Visual Studio 2015, but it was implemented as a separate extension. Now it's baked into the Visual Studio developer environment. So I've returned back to Visual Studio. I've reopened the project that's in the GitHub. And now I will go to my tools menu. And the first thing you want to notice is a very minor change, but it makes it easier to find your extensions, is that the Visual Studio team has moved extension and updates to the top position on the tools menu. The new feature that we're looking at in this demonstration here is the roaming extension manager. So there's this new node over on the left side of the screen. And when you click on this, it shows you your roamed extensions. So the basic idea is when you add an extension to Visual Studio, it will automatically get added to the roaming extension manager. These items are saved to the cloud, and you have to be logged in for this to work. So you log in with your Visual Studio account, you add an extension, and then when you switch over to another computer, let's say I'm working on my desktop computer back at work, when I open up Visual Studio there and I look inside the roaming extension manager, it'll show me all of the extensions that I've installed on my laptop, or vice versa. Now, you can filter this list. At the top of this list, you can see it shows the not installed. So it's looking at all my other extensions that I've installed on my other computers and suggesting these are ones that I haven't installed on this computer yet. So I can click on the one that I want to install and then click on the download button. Now this also gives me an opportunity to talk about another small change in the extension and updates dialog, is that you now batch your settings. When you When you add a new extension or you remove an extension, those gets batched. You'll see down here it says scheduled for install. There's added one. The add new file extension is available here. Now this won't install till I close this dialog and shut down Visual Studio. And then I'll see the install dialog pop up. Go back into extensions and updates. Now we'll look in here again. As I'm looking through this list in the Roaming Extension Manager, I can filter this list. I'm waiting for it to catch up with my clicks. Right now it's showing me the not installed on this local computer. I can also see the ones that are installed. And if I want to see a mixture of all of them, then I can choose from these other options, like sorting them by name or sorting them by author. Now, when you do this, you'll notice that there's different icon overlays. This one means that it's in the cloud, but I don't have it installed locally. And this one shows that I can, that it is installed. You'll also notice there's a feature here where I can stop roaming. In other words, it will remove this extension from the cloud list. It'll still be installed here, but it's not going to show up when I look at the list in my other computers. Now this next feature is probably my favorite feature in this release of Visual Studio for the IDE tools. I'm talking about the tool called Live Unit Testing. This feature works with any of the supported test frameworks like NUnit and XUnit. Today I'm using it with MS Test. So the first thing I need to do is open a project that contains unit tests. So that's what I've got here. I've got a brokerage library and I've got a test project here. And I'll go ahead and open the Test Explorer. Rebuild my project. Now my tests appear in the Test Explorer. And if you were not using the live unit tests, you know how, what you would do here. You would go in and choose the run all. And that goes through, runs my unit test, and I see the passing tests in my past test list over here. So the new feature is that with live unit testing is I can enable it by going here to the test menu, live unit testing, and choose start. And now what will happen is Visual Studio will monitor the code, detect when any changes are made, and recompile my project code. Then it runs the unit test in the background and shows the results in the text editor. So here's the code that's being tested. It's in this method, future calculate future payment date. So far it looks normal. Now let's enable this feature. Now what's going to happen is Visual Studio will compile this code and start running the unit tests in the background. And now that these green check marks appear, you can see that the live unit tests have finished. Now, what you see on the left side of the screen is these green check marks, and that tells me what's happened on the unit test for this line of code. For instance, on this line here, line 18, if I hover over this green check mark, it tells me in this tooltip that this line of code has coverage in 3 unit tests. Inside these case statements down here, this line of code is only covered by 1 test. And when you click on the green check mark, you see a list of the tests that are running against this line of code. So again, I'll go back up here to the top and choose this one where it's covered by 3 tests. Click on the green check mark, and I see that it's being covered by these 3 tests. Now the benefit of using live testing is that as you continue to write code, it is going to analyze what's happening in your code and tell you whether you're breaking your tests or whether you've written code that is not currently covered by any unit test. So what I'll do is I'll go down here below the switch statement Actually, I'll put it in the switch statement and I'll add another case here. Now you see, then the check marks, they're now our little stopwatch symbols there. That's telling me that the live unit test is analyzing what's happening. And when those timer marks disappear, then why now I'm looking at the latest test that it ran in the background. And I can see that now I have a test case that's analyzing this section of code. There's one test covering this. Now let's go down here, and below this section, I'll add an if statement. Again, you see that it's running the live unit tests. And now I see that this line of code, line 36, has a blue mark, which means it's covered by zero tests. Now, if I change this to be false, now I see line 34 is not being covered by any tests. So this gives you an opportunity to find out if you've got code that you've just added that needs to have a unit test written for it. And of course, the last thing, the benefit is if we break our code, you'll know about it instantly with the live unit test. Let me show you that. I'll remove this if statement. Then I'll go up to line 26, and I'll change the logic for adding the days to this date. I'll change that to 3. We'll wait. And now you'll see several places in Visual Studio that show that I have a broken test. For one, I can see there's a failed test over here in my Test Explorer. If I had Code Lens enabled, I would also see a failed test here at the Calculate Future Payment Date method level. And because I've got live unit testing enabled, I also see that these are the lines of code that are failing. So somewhere in one of these red lines is the code that I wrote that's causing the failure. So this is very useful. If you're refactoring code, you know you made changes that failed the test. If you're in the middle of refactoring, the red X will persist until the refactoring is correct. If you've made a mistake, then you'll know about it immediately. The next, I want to look at some of the debugging tools. And the two that I want to start with is a real simple one called Run to Click, and then the next one is the Exception Helper. This is my example code. I have this class that has this run to method in it, and then I'm calling that from program. No, I'm not. I'll fix that now then. Looks like I forgot to check that change into my source control. Let's switch over here and make this a internal. And then over here in program, I'll make a call to that method. And then I'll go over to this class and I'll put a breakpoint in here. Now I'll start the application. And I'll have to make this my startup project. I think I'm ready. Press F5 to debug. So I've hit my breakpoint, And we've all worked in debugging scenarios where you want to move to another section of your code, and you don't want to step through your code, and you don't want to put a breakpoint in your application either, because it's just a temporary, you're looking at something temporarily, and you don't want to go to the bother of putting in the breakpoint and then remembering to remove it later. So in Visual Studio currently, there's a way to go to this line 21 by right-clicking and choosing Run to Cursor. And that runs down to that line and then stops there. So the feature I'm looking at is called Run to Click Debugging, and it's a simple, and it's very similar to the Run to Cursor feature that is available in prior versions of Visual Studio. So here's how it works. I'll bring this back up to line 15, and then I'll click or hover my mouse in the code on line 21. You notice when I hover my mouse here that there is a green triangle that appears on the left side of the screen, and it disappears when I move from that line. It basically shows up on any line of code that is runnable. And that is a button. So if I move over here and hover over the triangle, you'll see that a outline appears. And then I get a tooltip that says run execution to here. I'll just click and it runs to that spot. So it's nearly identical to Run to Cursor. It's just whether you prefer if you're the type of developer that prefers visual glyphs in the UI, or that you don't want to use the context menu during debugging. You're not used to using the context menu and Run to Cursor. For the next feature, I'm going to run Visual Studio 2015. And while that's loading, I'll go over here and load my exception helper branch. Okay. So I'm in Visual Studio 2015, and I've loaded the same project, and I want to talk about what happens when you have an unhandled exception in your code. So I'm running my code, I have a debugger attached, I hit an unhandled exception, and you switch over to the Visual Studio IDE, and you see this exception assistant pop up on the screen. This has been around for many versions of Visual Studio. And it's useful, but it has some limitations. And I want to talk about this first before I show you the replacement for this in Visual Studio 2017. So let's look at the IDE here. One of the problems with this, first of all, this shows up when you're working with managed code. So you hit this unhandled exception in a managed application, and you'll see this. This is called the exception assistant, and it's large, and it's not resizable. In this example on the problem, I can't see the code that's behind it. So I either have to close it, and then to bring it back when I want to see more information about the exception, then I have to move over here and open. The dialog again, this window here. The other thing you can do is you can grab it and move it around, and while you're moving it, it gets semi-transparent, so you can sort of see the code behind the exception. Now, if you're working with unmanaged code, you don't see this exception assistant. I'll show you what I mean. I'll stop running the code, go to Tools Options, I'll disable the enable the exception assistant. So now when I run the application and hit that unhandled exception, this is the same dialog you would see if you're working in an unmanaged application. It's a modal dialog. You can't switch back to Visual Studio. The only way to get rid of this is to click the break or continue button. So that's the current state of affairs that we have in Visual Studio at the moment. Let's see what we've added in 2017 to make this a little bit more palatable. Same application. So here's the new exception helper. And the first thing you'll notice is that it's a lot smaller in size. In fact, you can make it even smaller than this. You can shrink it down to quite a small size. If you don't like this size, in fact, in this case, it's too small, I can make it larger by sizing it so I can see what's in here. I can resize the helper. Now you'll notice that as I scroll up and down in the text, in this case it's unpinned. By default it's usually pinned, so let me pin it. So this is what it typically looks like. You got a little handle here. I think I dragged it out when I was resizing it. There's a little handle here on the top of the helper that shows the line of code where the unhandled exception is. And normally when you scroll up and down, the exception helper moves with it. Now if you click on this to unpin it or drag it like I did, now it becomes a free floating window. And you can position it where you want. Now you can scroll up and down to the text and the exception helper stays down here in this location. And it remembers this position between debugging sessions. So if I stop debugging and then restart, you'll see it remembers the last position. Now I'll repin it to put it back in its default location. You can close it by clicking on the X button. Now to bring that back up, if you want to make the exception helper reappear, you can click on this red X, click to open the exception helper, I should say. And then the other thing is, it's a small helper, but Microsoft is also makes it available so you can see some of the other information that's in here. So if I want to see more information about this, right now I only see that the index was out of range. I can click on the view details, and that brings me into what's called the quick watch window. And I can then drill down into the exception and find out all the other embedded information that's in that class. So here I can see the inner exception is null, and I can read the message and so on. So if you ever want to get back to the details that you're used to seeing, you can get to them through the quick watch. There's also some other areas. You can copy the details to your clipboard. You can get access to the exception settings in here. Click on this area. And you can then specify that you want to break when this exception type is thrown. You can also edit the conditions for this out-of-range exception. There's one other feature I really like about this, and that's when you have inner exceptions. So we'll stop. So I'll start running the application. And then I had a question about why this is appearing here. This is the WPF debugging toolbar, which is obscuring part of my button. That's something you can turn off in the tools options. I'll click on the divide by zero button. I've hit this exception. And the thing that I want to see here is in my code, I have a catch block that's catching a divide by zero exception, and then I'm raising my own argument out of range exception. So I'm including the divide by zero exception in this when I throw the new exception. And so that's the inner exception. And the nice thing about this exception helper is that it shows both of those. You don't have to drill down. You don't have to go into view details, go into your exception, and look in your inner exception to read that information. It's surfaced right here. You can see the first one is customer count cannot be zero. That's my exception. And then here's the divided by zero exception, which is the original exception. In this next section, we'll look at some new items that are in the code editor. And another one of my favorite features is the refactoring tools. So in the code editor, we'll look at the new GoTo tool, and we'll talk briefly about find all references, some of the modifications that have been made there. We'll also look at completion list filtering, and then we'll look at some of the text editor settings. Then in the second half, we'll look at the refactoring tools, which is, these refactorings are available for C# and Visual Basic. And we'll look at, they're all listed here on this slide, but I won't read all these to you. We'll just look at them in the example. In the new Visual Studio, there is a go-to menu in the edit menu. And this is a combination of several tools that were in the older version of Visual Studio. So we've always had the go-to line tool, and that's one of the features. And there was also the navigate to feature where you can navigate to sections of the code. Those two have been combined into this one tool now called the go-to. And if you have a code window open, let me open up a code file here. And I go to this menu again, go to Edit, Go To, and go to this first line. This is the same as the old Go To tool, where you basically select a line number. So if I want to go to line 21, I just type that number in here, and I press Enter, and it takes me to that line of code in my file. If I try to go to a line of code that doesn't exist, that, you'll see that the go-to dialog now gives me some feedback that says, please enter a line between 1 and 74. Subtle improvement, but I like it. So the next thing to look at is there is a number of other go-tos. Go to all, go to file, go to type, and so on. So when you open this little mini window here, it defaults to go to all. And you can filter this down by choosing from this list. I can go to line. That takes me back to the same choice I had a few minutes ago. I can go to files. So now I'll type in book. And it shows me there are several files in this project that have the word book in it. Book.cs, bookdatasource.cs, and booklist.txt. Now, here's what I want you to notice. I filtered this item down on the go-to by clicking on this button. And several things happened when I did that. For one, it put in the letter F here, so F space. So that's saying, that's another way of saying go to files. So there's three ways to get to go to files. I can go to edit, go to file. I can type in F space, and that toggles on this setting here, or I can click on the taskbar and choose files. You notice that if you don't remember these keyboard shortcuts, you can type in the question mark and it'll show you what the keyboard shortcuts are. So colon for line, question mark shows this list, F for files, M for members, and so on. So the point here is if you want to look through your project and look for just types, there's my types. If I want to look just for members, I want to look for symbols, or I can also filter down to look at just the current document or include contents of external files. Now, a similar tool is called Find All References. I'm looking here for the book class. There it is. So you are looking at your code, and you know that you want to know which sections of your application code are referencing this book class. Now, if you're in the book class itself, there's a couple of ways you can handle this. One, you can use the Code Lens feature if you're in Visual Studio, one of the enterprise editions that has Code Lens. You can see that listed on the top here. I don't have Code Lens turned on, so let's turn that on. I'll click the Enable Code Lens. And it'll show that there are three references to this code. Now that works great, but when you're working in, let's say I go over here to this book list XAML file and I go to the C# code behind, and I see that this on line 25, I'm instantiating an instance of the book class and calling this get bestselling book and getting the reference to that book class here. If I want to see the references here, I can't use the code lens. So instead, what you typically do is you right-click on this and you choose Find All References, or Shift F12. Now this window, shown on the bottom of the screen, has been in Visual Studio for several versions, but there are a lot of improvements to this window, and that's what I want to talk about. For one, the first thing you'll notice is that in the section here in the references, it's all color-coded now, and it matches what you'd see if you were in the C# file. So if I look at this line of code here, I can see this says return new book, it returns in blue. That's the same that you would see in Visual Studio. And you'll notice also as I'm clicking on these items, it's navigating me to that. That's not new, but the color coding is. And this works also for C++ and Visual Basic Project, so you get the correct color coding for those languages. In the previous versions of Visual Studio, these three buttons existed: copy, go to previous, and go to next. Everything else on the toolbar is new in Visual Studio 2017. So one of the things you can do with the Find All References now is scope. I can only search the entire solution, or I can just look at the open documents, or I can look at the current project or change documents. I can also go over here and choose a section where it's called Group By. So I can group these by definition only. I can choose to group by definition, then by project, and many other choices. You can do a search. In this case, I found the method called get random book. So again, that's a way of filtering down the results that I'm getting. And then I want to talk about one more feature, which is this keep results. So let's say that I want to look for the author class. Let's go over here. Go to the author class. Click here, do Find All References. That finds these items. Now, if I do another search, I'll lose what I have currently showing in the Find All References. So what I can do is click on this Keep All Results, or Keep Results, I should say, and now I can do another search, and I'll end up with multiple tabs across the bottom of the document. Over here. Go to my book class, Find All References, and now I've got my book references on this tab and my author references on the author references tab. For the next demonstration, we'll take a look at the completion list filtering. You've all seen the completion list. Some of us call it IntelliSense. IntelliSense is a broad category. What typically when you see the drop-down list in Visual Studio, that's the completion list. And I'm looking at the ability to filter this list. In all the versions of Visual Studio up to now, you have this idea of a completion list. So if I type in var history book equal new book, as I'm typing in the word book, I get this list of potential choices. And Visual Studio is very smart about what it shows you here. It knows that I can instantiate a book here, so it's showing me that list. If I'm at the beginning of a line of text, it'll show me words like, if I type in var, it'll show me var here. But if I'm at the end of the line of code, let's say where I'm saying new, if I try to use the var keyword here, it doesn't show up because it doesn't make sense based on the context of where I'm at in my code. Right? So that's a great feature of the completion list. The problem is, as we've gotten more and more C# features and more .NET features, the completion list has been getting larger and larger. And there's a lot of stuff in the completion list now, and sometimes it's hard to see what you're looking for. And so what we have now is the ability to take that list and filter it down to only a subset of the information. Let me show you what I mean. So I'll go back. I'm instantiating book. You see, when I get the completion list, I've got a choice here in the bottom of show me only the interfaces. Now, there's no interfaces to start with B, so let me back up a bit. Back up to here, get the completion list showing, and then I'll say just show me the interfaces. Now, this is a toggle, so if I click on it once, it'll show me the interfaces, and if I click on it again, it goes back to showing me all. So if I click on it once and I'm showing interfaces, and I click on this one, I'm showing interfaces and classes. So I can see, I can filter by classes, by structures, by enumerations, by delegates, by namespaces. I'll turn these off. With my namespaces. And by keywords, and by code snippets. Now this also works if you're working with members of a type. So I'll go back and instantiate my book. Now go to the next line. Now I'm looking at the members of the book type, and you can see that there are three choices down here for filtering. There is filter by properties, filter by events, and of course, you know what this last one is, it's filter by methods. You also might have noticed when I hover over this, it tells me that if I want to filter by events, I can use Alt-V or I can use Alt-P. So let's try that. I've got my list, I hold down the Alt key and type the V key to shrink down the choices of members to just the events. So the takeaway from this section is the autocomplete works the same as it always has in prior versions of Visual Studio, and now you have the added ability to filter the list to a smaller subset of items. I think for the next demonstration, I'll show the refactoring tools. I'll open up refactor in my branches. And then I'll open up this class here. Now, again, once again, refactoring has been around in Visual Studio for a long time. And every time Visual Studio comes out, it adds another one or two refactorings. So we're going to look at here is some of the new refactorings that are available for C# and Visual Basic. So this first one we're looking at is where I'm instantiating a book, and then on line 15 through line 19, I'm setting some properties. Now, Visual Studio has analyzed my code and looked at it and thinks that there's a refactoring that applies. So you can see it by when if I move my cursor to line 14, you'll see that this quick action appears. And inside the quick action will be the refactoring choice. It's called object initialization. Object initialization can be simplified. I'll come back and look at that in a minute. But I want you to see there's another signal on line 14 that there's a refactoring. Now this doesn't work for all the refactorings, just a few of them. But you'll look at the word new, and you'll see there are three gray dots under that keyword. And that's telling me there's something about the instantiation of this book that's a potential for refactoring. To actually implement the refactoring, you go to the quick action and then choose this item. Now, this dialog has been around in Visual Studio for a while. It's a preview of what's happening. I can see that if I run this, this is what's going to happen. I saw the preview, and I'll do Control-Z to go back. Try that one more time. Clicked on it too quick. I did it again. I'll be a little bit slower and more deliberate this time. Click. Hover. In the red text, I can see the changes. Here's the new changes in the green text. I can preview the changes, walk through the changes in Visual Studio, and or I can choose to fix all occurrence in this document, in this project, or this solution. I like this one, so I'll go ahead and just double click on this one. And it goes through and basically uses the object initializer syntax. For the next example, this one's called the move out variable declarations in line. You see on line 27, those three dots are showing up again on the date time variable, on the variable type. So the deal here is I'm using triparse, and you've used triparse in your code. You know how it works. You do a triparse, you pass in the value that you want to parse, you get back a Boolean, and then you pass in an out parameter so that you can actually get the value that was parsed. So that's what I'm doing here. And in the new version of C#, I've got the ability to inline the declaration. So instead of declaring it out here on line 27, I can inline it inside the triparse call. So I'll go ahead and implement this. Use the same feature I used before, which is the quick link. And now it removed that variable and placed the date time keyword here. Third example, this time you don't get the three dots. Right? There's nothing on this line that tells me there's a refactor until I get my cursor within the call to the string.format. Now I get the quick action. And what this one will do is convert it to an interpolated string. So it'll go from calling string.format to using the new C# 6 interpolated string $ syntax. Last two refactorings I want to show is sync file name and type name. Here's the example. I've got this file called pub.cs. And inside that file, I've got a class called publication. And a lot of teams or developers prefer to have their file name match the instance of the, or in the declaration that's inside that file. So with the refactoring, I can move up here to the publication, and I've got two choices. I can rename the file to publication, or I can rename the type to pub. So I want the first example, rename file to publication.cs. And you see that I now have a new publication.cs file. Another example is here inside this book.cs file. At the bottom, I've got two enums declared, buyer type and cover type. Depending on what your favorite coding syntax are, what your preferences are for your naming conventions, and how you organize your project, you may not want these enums in the same file as your book class. So what I can do is use a refactoring to move them out of this file and make a separate class out of it. Separate file, I should say. So we'll come here, use the quick action, and say move type to buyer type.cs. And now I've got this new buyer type CS file, and I'll do the same thing with this cover type. Quick and easy. I got time to show you one more feature, and for this one I will use a couple of the text editor features. I will use here it is, text editor, this branch. I'm looking at some of the settings that are in Tools Options in the C# editor. And I'll start by looking in the Advanced section. A couple of things that we now have the ability to show guides in Visual Studio for your C# code. So I can show guides for declaration level constructs. And I'll get the dotted lines drawn between the namespace, beginning of the namespace and the ending of the namespace, between the class and the different methods. I can also choose to do the same thing for code constructs like an if statement. Show guides for code level constructs. That would show between while the parts of your while statements or between an if statement, like I said. The one I want to look at here is this one, split string literals on enter. You're going to love this feature. It's simple, but you're going to love it. That's enabled. I have this long string on line 11. I'm going to put my cursor here at the end of this sentence and press the enter key. And Visual Studio took that one string, turned it into two strings, and used the plus concatenation operator to put them back together. Okay. Now we'll look at IntelliSense section, and I want to talk about the completion list, and I want to talk about the enter key behavior. So the completion list, normally the completion list appears after a character is typed. So let me go back and show you the code here. I'm going to go to this section, and we'll say var b equal new book. Right, and you get the book up here, the completion list is showing on the screen, and the problem we have is if you dismiss this by pressing the escape key, that completion list has now disappeared. And if you press the backspace key or the delete key, it doesn't reappear. Okay? To make it reappear, you have to hold down the control and tap the space bar, or you have to retype in the word you were looking for. Well, with this new feature, you can have it appear when you press the backspace key or the delete key. Make the completion list appear. Now I'll press the escape key to make it disappear. Then I'll press the backspace key and it reappears on the screen. And for the final demonstration, we'll look at this last feature, this feature here, enter key behavior. So we'll start with this first one, never add a new line on enter. So what's happening here is I get that same book keyword open. And normally the way autocompletion works is you type like space and it'll autocomplete that, or you type in the tab key and it completes it, or you type in a parenthesis and it completes that value. Right? What happens when you press the enter key? That's what we're looking at now. So right now, if I press the enter key and I'm in the middle of the word, I just typed in BO and I press enter, it finishes typing the word book and leaves the cursor on the same line. Now if I'm at the end of the line of text and I press the enter key, the book keyword's there, but I'm pressing the enter key again, it's at this point it's moves to the new line. Now is that what I was expecting? So never add a new line on enter. Now if you choose this one, only add a new line enter after the end of the fully typed word. So now I'll do B-O and then press enter. It auto-completes the word. Moves down to the next line. And then the final choice is Always add new line on Enter. So now I can be in the middle of the word like this, press the Enter key, and it will autocomplete it and then move me to the next line. So that concludes my look at some of the new IDE features. As I said, I can't cover them all. There's several hours worth of content you could talk about the IDE features. This is some of the ones I thought were the more interesting ones that are available in this new version of Visual Studio. I encourage you to explore them and find out which ones you like, and I encourage you to enjoy working with the new Visual Studio. Thanks.